name is Sri Ram Sundarajan. I'm a professor of mechanical engineering, and I serve as associate dean for academic affairs.
All up at Deliberative Right GME's office.
Office or sometimes.
And we're happy to do this, the 2025 edition of our annual town hall, where we talk about flexible work policies. And joining me today is Adam Peters. Adam, are you on?
Yes, I'm here.
Yep. Adam is our HR partner in the College of Engineering, and so we'll be talking about flexible work policies. Connie Hargrave, our Associate Dean for Engagement Excellence, is and Carmen Gomes, our Faculty Success Advisor, are part of the team that catching a flight, so she won't be able to join us. But I believe that there is a she's convening the women's faculty group right after this, and then you'll have more opportunity to discuss this during those during that meeting as well. So again, we'll get started here. This is on flexible work policies. So our agenda here. Oh, I should say that Megan is recording this meeting. Especially the portion where we're talking about the content on the slides. We will pause the recording, and I will indicate when it's being paused so that we can have Q&A, and so that we can discuss that freely without the worry of it being recorded. So I'll indicate that when it's happening, but the actual presentation itself is being recorded. So for the folks who couldn't make this meeting, at least they will have it and it's accessible to them, right? So Megan, can you confirm that we've started recording?
Yes, this is recording.
Okay, thank you. So the agenda today is provide a very brief context and rationale, and essentially we're covering the two areas where we often get questions throughout the year, and there is always a sense of, I'm just going to use the word lack of clarity or confusion. So these are the areas we often are answering questions the most throughout the year, and hence that's the focus of this town hall. And then we'll briefly talk a little bit about the whole portfolio of flexible faculty policies and resources, and then we'll have Q&A. We'll probably have a Q&A session at the end of FMLA. I should clarify that the FMLA, which is the Family Medical Leave Act, is applicable to all employees at Iowa State, not only faculty. So that is applicable to everyone. And then the second part, which is the FMDA, is applicable only to the faculty. So the rationale here, you can read the 2015, but the gamut here is that, or the crux here is that as an institution, we're doing our best to make sure that we're supporting the reality of life today. Work-life integration, work-life balance is important, and providing opportunities where that work-life integration can be achieved through as much flexibility as we can provide, given the constraints that we have at our institution, I think is the mindset of the leadership at the institution, and certainly right from the president's office, and certainly here at the college. So that's kind of the context in which we are operating, and then we'll talk about the two major programs, FMLA and FMDA, in this context. And as a summary, the institution has a whole portfolio of things that we do to support flexible, faculty life, work-life integration, let's put it that way, right? So for those in the faculty ranks, you know, there's extension of the tenure clock. We're going to be talking about FMDA. There's ability to scale back appointments if the situation warrants. Another area that I guess in a future workshop we might talk a little bit more about might be accommodations at the workplace, because we've seen several examples of that come through. And there are some things that need to go through that process as opposed to FMDA or anything else. As many of you might be aware, we have a strong program in a dual career. That aspect takes into account the need for families to be integrated in work and life, and of course FMLA as well. So that's again a quick snapshot of the various things that's available here at ISU, and then in Q&A we can talk a little bit more of any specific thing if you have questions. Okay, so again, we're talking about FMLA and FMDA. We'll dive right into this, and we'll start with FMLA. And because it applies to all our employees, and our HR team is the primary, I'm going to use the word driver of this process. They're the ones who are engaged in this. I'm going to turn this over to Adam at this point so that he can go through the presentation of these slides. And then at the end of this section, we'll have time for Q&A. And then at that time, I'll remind Megan to stop recording. So Adam, go ahead, and then I'm driving. So when you say next slide, I'll click.
Sounds good. So FMLA stands for the Family Medical Leave Act. It's a federal law. So when you hear FMLA, it's applicable to a federal law that requires covered employers to provide eligible employees with time off from work in specific situations. Iowa State does fit the covered employer under the FMLA. The law was passed in 1993, and it's later been amended. Iowa doesn't have a specific FMLA law, but they do have a Iowa Code 216.6.2E allows a birth mother to take up to 8 weeks of unpaid leave as documented by a physician due to disability caused by pregnancy, childbirth, or related condition. So it's possible to fit the Iowa law and not qualify for FMLA, or it's possible to use them in congruency with each other. So. As far as those two laws go, they can work together or they can work independently. So, what is covered by FMLA? So birth of a child and care for a newborn child, placement of a child when the employee for adoption or foster care for the employee's spouse, registered domestic partner, child or parent with a serious health condition that makes the employee unable to perform the functions of the employee's job. More listed on the next one for you. Qualifying exigency as defined by the Department of Labor arising out of the fact that the spouse, son, daughter, or parent, or the service member of the employee is on a covered active duty or has been notified of impending call order to covered active duty to care for a spouse, son, daughter, parent, or next of kin that is a service center who is a current member or veteran of the Armed Forces, National Guard, or Reserves, and who has an illness or injury incurred in the line of duty. So FMLA covers all of these different situations, and some of them are pretty broad. So like care of yourself, sometimes it is very broad and it's basically determined by your healthcare provider in that circumstance. So. Key information as far as FMLA goes, you qualify for FMLA after completing 12 months of employment. This does not have to be consecutive. So if worked for Iowa State for 5 months, transitioned to a different employer, returned, and then worked for Iowa State again, that previous time does count towards your 12 months of employment. So it doesn't have to be consecutive in that regard. You also have to have worked at least 1,250 hours in the previous 12 months. So if it isn't consecutive, you do need to hit that 1,250 hour threshold before you qualify for FMLA. FMLA leave is unpaid, so it's leave that is approved and allows the employee to take care of whatever business that they have, but it is unpaid. You are able, in conjunction with FMLA, to take time off, and it provides eligible employees with protected time off, reinstatement to the same or equivalent position, continued benefits, and the right to be free from discrimination, interference, or retaliation for taking FMLA. So you can take your sick or vacation time, depending on the situation that you're in addition to FMLA, to make it paid. But FMLA leave itself is not inherently paid. With one exception, the FMLA provides a total of 12 weeks or 480 hours for an FTE of 100% FTE for covered situations. Iowa State maintains its health and dental insurance during periods of FMLA by bypassing its share of the insurance premiums, and Iowa State will maintain any retirement benefits in which the employee has been enrolled prior to taking FMLA. So FMLA provides up to 12 weeks per year. It is a rolling calendar, so if you have, there's two different types of FMLA. There's intermittent and continuous leave. So in some circumstances, you may be approved for 12 continuous weeks of leave, some cases you may be approved for intermittently for a year at a time that you use during situations that you may have flare-ups for like migraines or something along those lines. You have up to 480 hours per year that you can utilize. So as that rolling calendar works, essentially, as you pass the previous use of FMLA, the time regenerates for you. So it's done on a rolling calendar as far as that is concerned. I think, ready for the next one?
Hey, Adam, just a quick clarification. So it's 480 hours for one FTE. That means it prorates depending on FTE. Is that correct?
Yes, it does prorate based off of your FTE. So the amount of time that you can get approved for, if you're like a 75% FTE, it would be prorated down based off of your FTE status. So. So birth or care of a child, adoption, placement of a foster child. So FMLA eligibility, you have to be employed by Iowa State for at least 12 months and worked at least 1,250 hours prior to the start of the FMLA leave. What FMLA will cover is job protected leave, continuation of health insurance benefits, and return to employment upon completion of your leave. The amount of leave is up to 12 weeks of family leave per rolling 12-month period, which is kind of the 12-month calendar rolling that I just kind of alluded to on the previous slide. So FMLA does not provide paid time off, so employee wages during an FMLA-covered absence will be provided in accordance with university policy. Employees eligible for FMLA will use applicable university paid time off benefits concurrently with FMLA. Circumstances will dictate the type of leave to be used. Traditionally, we go by whatever your medical provider indicates as far as how much time you need for your medical leave and what kind of needs are needed during that time period. So the UHR just usually takes its cues from whatever your medical provider provides on the FMLA paperwork. And I think that covers FMLA for that piece.
So Adam, could you talk briefly about how the FMLA process gets, if somebody wants to do FMLA, what would they have to do?
FMLA, because in most every circumstance, it's related to medical information, protected health information. We usually encourage the employee to start with human resources to engage and see if FMLA might be a good option for them. So reaching out to Bailey or Justin or myself and letting them know that you may have a need. You don't need to let us know the details of what your needs are. Just letting us know that you might have a need for FMLA and how to start that process. You can initiate your own FMLA and workday via an absence if you would like. HR can also initiate it for you. If you're having struggles or you're uncertain of how to do that process, we can help guide you and support you during that process. That trigger and workday has our FMLA specialist over in UHR specifically send you the information that you need to provide to get an approved leave. So they will reach out to you, send you the FMLA paperwork that you would complete with your healthcare provider and turn into UHR. Once all that information has been turned in and processed, the official leave would be processed in workday. I did allude to it earlier, there are two different types of FMLA. So there's continuous and intermittent leave. So depending on what type of leave you go on, you'll receive different direction on how that goes. But we provide all that direction on how to handle the leave and how to handle absences related to the leave and those types of things. So.
Yes. So from our perspective, I think our recommendation would be if you are thinking about this, that you touch base with the HR team. That way you can have any questions answered and you don't have to operate on any assumptions you've made, right? Clarify that so that you're fully informed as you're making these decisions. So our recommendation would be always consult with Adam and his team about what you're thinking of doing so that then you can decide what the next steps are and the timeline.
Yes, feel free to reach out with any questions. Even if you're not even certain that it might be an FMLA situation, you can reach out to us on that. You don't have to know that you need FMLA to reach out. So, okay.
So before we transition to FMDA, Megan, could you pause recording for a minute, please, and let me know when it's paused.
It's paused.
All right, thank you. So I want to take a We have plenty. I think this is scheduled up to an hour. So before I go to FMDA, and since FMLA hits faculty, staff, all employees, I want to take some time here to see if there are questions. Feel free to unmute yourself and ask your question, or if you're more comfortable just putting it in the chat, you're welcome to do that. However you'd like to do it. So I'm going to take I'll pause here and to see if there are any questions.
Hey, good afternoon all. This is Paul. I do have a question, Adam, about the FMLA. Does it roll over any unused, or does it start back, to the default 480 each year?
So a lot of times, it depends on the situation of what your medical provider is giving to us. So if, you know, you're having a procedure and your medical provider says you need 2 weeks for recovery, that will be what the FMLA gets put in for. It does reset on that rolling calendar. So if you go on FMLA for 4 weeks in March of this year, come March of next year, your 480 hours will reset again. So, you have 480 hours to use on that rolling calendar. So it just really depends on when you use the time on when it regenerates back. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Is it from the first instance of you availing of FMLA, is that when the clock starts, Adam, for the 12 months?
Yeah, once the process starts, like as you use time throughout the year, it's tracked. And then once you hit 480 hours within a 12. Exhausted, essentially. But once you hit a time period where you utilized it 12 months ago, it regenerates back up, so you may, you know, re-accrue a certain X number of hours based off of when you used it in the previous year. So,
yeah. Thank you. Other questions?
You can't have multiple FMLAs approved at the same time, so you may have FMLA approved for yourself at one point. And then you may have another FMLA approved for care of a family member. So you aren't limited to only having one approved leave case running at a time. You can have multiple FMLA cases running congruently. So.
And Adam, just to clarify, it's Carmen. You need to have 1 year, 12 months period before you can ask for any FMLA.
12 months of total employment, but it doesn't have to be continuous. And then you have to meet that 1,250 hours of time worked within that year as well, so.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just gonna, where was it? Yeah, here it is, yeah, okay. Other questions on FMLA? Okay, last call. Any more questions? If not, we'll continue. At the end of the session, we'll open it up for Q&A again. But since we're transitioning to a different topic, I wanted to make sure people had the space to ask questions. Okay, if not, we'll continue. Megan, could you let me know when you've restarted recording?
Recording has resumed.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we'll continue with the second major topic, which is faculty modified duties assignment, or as an acronym, it's called FMDA. Again, this is applicable only to the faculty ranks. So this policy we have in place supports work-life balance for our faculty, 12-month, 9-month appointment. It is for all our faculty, both for tenure track and term. I think about a year ago, the institution expanded this option to the term faculty as well. So basically, what this does, as the name suggests, is it temporarily modifies the duties of a faculty member for a particular semester, so that they can better balance work and life, for the circumstance associated with the birth of a child, the adoption of a child, or the foster care placement of a child. So it's specifically for that particular occurrence, right? So because this is codified in our policy, and Board of Regents has a window into this policy as well, the faculty responsibilities need to remain at 100% effort level during this time, and it needs to be documented, right? So the effort levels may be redistributed. That's the way to think about it. And practically, operationally speaking, the time where you need to be on campus is related to your teaching enterprise. And so typically, this will be a remodification of your effort levels between teaching and other areas, or recodifying exactly how you support supporting the teaching and learning mission in that particular area in lieu of being physically in a classroom. Right. So as the second bullet indicates, your effort level remains at 100%. Your PRS gets modified, and then your effort levels in the areas of responsibility are rebalanced for one semester on a temporary basis to provide you with greater flexibility during that time period, specifically for the occurrence of birth of a child, adoption of a child, and foster care placement of a child. Okay. So again, who is eligible? All the faculty members are eligible. Just like with the there is a time frame involved though. So the FMDA must be completed within 12 months of the occurrence of the event, birth of a child, adoption, foster care, placement of a child. And the person who can request this has to be designated as a primary caregiver for the child, right? So it can be either parent. If both parents are employed by the university, they must use different semesters to take the FMDA, but within the 12-month time period. So you can't, so both of you cannot take it the same semester. You have to have a discussion as to how you want to do that, and then request. Faculty members can participate in the FMDA program as early as their first semester at Iowa State. So if you are joining and you happen to be in the situation, you can request for an FMDA right at the first semester. And we have done that here in the college as well. So we totally support that, because life happens and we don't control that fully, right? The other thing you should be cognizant is any particular faculty member is eligible for FMDA only twice in the course of their employment at Iowa State. So you can request for MDA twice and FMDA, so basically for the two separate instances of birth, adoption, or foster care placement of a child, right? So those are the parameters under which this program has been structured. So again, all faculty members can request it, has to be requested within 12 months of the occurrence. Both parents can take it. Both of you cannot take it in the same semester, and you can take it as early as the first semester at Iowa State. And finally, you can take it, you can avail of this thing twice during your employment at Iowa State. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the modification of PRS, because we typically get a lot of questions related to this. So as you know, as faculty members, PRS should be an accurate reflection of how the faculty members' efforts are being expended, and the PRS is the basis for things like annual review, faculty advancement, things like that. Now, while on an FMDA, the faculty members' responsibilities are rebalanced, like we talked about. The thing that we typically get is, let's just take an example of a PRS where it's 40% teaching, 40% 50% research, 10% service. So let's just take that as an example. So typically the teaching might be redistributed more to research scholarship. And so let's assume that goes down to, I'm just making this number up, so maybe goes down to 20%, and then research goes up to 70%, and the rest stays, service stays the same, right? As an example. So this would suggest on paper to a person looking at it that suddenly your expectations in research shot up, and therefore you should proportionally do as many grants, as many papers, as many things, and therefore your overall workload is staying pretty much the same. Now on theory, that might sound fine, but practically that's not what the intent of the FMDA is, right? So FMDA is to support the arrival of a child, right, in the life of the family. So we ask faculty and chairs to be cognizant of this context. So it's not an expectation of college suddenly that your workload and everything else goes up, right? There are different ways research and scholarship is accomplished, apart from just producing papers and grants and so on, right? There are readings that can be done, there's preparation that can be done. Similarly, in the teaching mission, there are other ways that you can work on improving courses, things like that, without being physically present here. So we ask staff to be cognizant of this, especially when in the following year, annual reviews and everything are being done. The context of the purpose of the FMDA needs to be taken into account. So we totally understand that it is meant to provide some flexibility and not necessarily a way to basically suddenly shoot up expectations in another area. So I'm happy to answer more questions on that, but I just want to make sure that that was clear. Now, at the conclusion of the FMDA, this is temporary for one semester, the PRS is then reset, right? So then it goes back to what it was before or to a new state that is in consultation with the chair. Now, typically it goes back to the way it was before. So for example, if your most assistant professors in the college have a pretty standard PRS, so it goes back to that because the expectations are changing. Now, the conclusion in most cases, associate and full would also go back to the same thing, but perhaps something might happen where, you know, maybe a service portion, something may happen that you decide maybe you want the associate chair and the chair talks to you about it. Whatever it is, it has to be reset to whatever is the new state because the FMDA is meant to be temporary and only for one semester. That makes sense? So that's kind of how the modification of the PRS works. The other question we've been asked in the past is, you know, why is the temporary, so typically PRSs are meant to be more long-term. Why is it being codified for something so temporary as for just one semester? And that's specifically because this is codified into our policy and because if there are reporting requirements to Board of Regents, etc., it has to be documented. So this is how currently it is being documented. There have been some ideas proposed about how about an addendum or a note or something rather than actually rebalancing the PRS. Those are conversations we are continuing to have with the provost office, and we'll see if there are alternate methods that may come. But today, this is how it is documented. Okay. Other key aspects of the FMDA, the maximum period for which PRS duties will be, we talked about, is temporary for one semester. Typically, an FMDA, your benefits are not impacted because your PRS is being made whole, right? Again, a 12-month or 9-month faculty member who's a birth mother may use sick leave for maternity, according to ISU policy, if eligible. So FMDA is not meant to be in lieu of something else, such as taking sick leave or taking FMLA as well, right? It is meant to be, think of it as a comprehensive suite of options that you can take depending upon your situations, right? So that last bullet, therefore, is important in this regard. If full leave is appropriate, if you really cannot do anything given your circumstances, then you should definitely go through the FMLA process. In fact, as we will show on the next slide, the process for FMDA asks you to talk with HR first about your situation to see if FMLA would also make sense for your situation, right? Because FMDA is, you are still, your FTE is not changed. That means you're still an employee of the university, and so you're still required to do the duties that are part of being a faculty member. It is not leave, right? It is not faculty leave. It is modified duties assigned. So if taking leave is better for your situation, that's what FMLA is for. That's what sick leave and all those things are for, and you should explore those options with HR to see if that's better for your situation than FMDA, right? We can't blanketly say one is better than the other for everyone because everybody's circumstances would be kind of unique. So I just want to be clear about it. FMDA is not leave. So FMDA is not meant to say, yep, you're on full salary, you don't have to do anything at all. That's not what it is, right? So think about, you should talk with HR as you're considering an FMDA to see if FMLA and other things are might be a better option for you. And again, I'm happy to answer more questions on that later. Okay, so I just wanted to spend a few minutes on talking about what the request process looks like and what the approval workflow looks like for an FMDA. So typically, you should always start in a conversation with your department chair as a faculty member. If you're thinking about FMDA, if you know some circumstances coming up in a future semester, because as you might imagine, rebalancing your PRS, which historically often happens mostly on the teaching side, impacts the chair, the department's operations in being able to assign teaching duties and things like that. And so enough heads up to be able to account for that is as you might imagine, helpful, and in some sense it is needed, right? So the department can plan accordingly. So you should talk to your department chair first about this potential FMD. Then the next step is square away with the department chair, then talk to the HR partner and tell them that you're considering to you're going to be participating in FMDA. And this is where Provost office reviews it, and then they will say yes, it's approved. That comes back to us in the college. This says HR partner. I believe it's HR partner, and actually that's true. I think it comes back to them, and then that decision gets communicated back to the department, and then the green light is there. You go ahead, and the department goes ahead with its plans for the FMDA. You go ahead with your plan with whatever you're doing. For the FMDA. So that's kind of the overall process. I can tell you typically all FMDA requests, because it's tied with specific occurrences of the arrival of a child or the adoption or a foster care placement, typically these get approved, right? The only thing is we want to make sure that the PRS, all those things have been squared away before and not after. Because, like I said, this is related to an occurrence. The parents will be busy with the arrival of the child. That's not the time to then iterate about what the PRS should look like. It has to be done before everything's squared away. So that way you can focus on the things that you need to focus. That's kind of the process for FMDA. Okay, we have the slide up again about the portfolio. I just want to mention one more thing connected with FMDA. Like I mentioned, FMDA is not leave, right? So it rebalances the portfolio. If you are in a situation where you cannot do, where you think you cannot do certain duties, that typically has to go through the workplace accommodation process. Because, you know, we cannot unilaterally basically say, yeah, you can't, looks like you can't, I'll just take an example, maybe you have a health condition that precludes you from being in the classroom, right? So, all right. Oh, I see. Okay, therefore you don't have to teach this semester. That's not a decision we can make because it's related to health conditions and things like that. That has to go through the workplace accommodations process and see they make the determination, and then we will adapt accordingly. So I just want to point that out because that's a separate process. And if that's a situation you think you might be in, or you anticipate being in, or you're made aware that might be a situation, again, talk to HR. They will guide you through the workplace accommodation process. That's an HR process, because that way, you know, your health information and things like that is typically the HR domain. They will go through that process, and then they will make a determination, and then let the academic college and the department know, and then we work to see how we meet that determination. Adam, do you have anything else to add on that? Because I know in the past, this is also, I just want to emphasize the fact that's a separate process. So I don't know if you can if you wouldn't mind spending a couple of minutes on that, of how that process works, and then we can open it up for Q&A.
Yeah, there's actually a formal page that you can submit a request for an accommodation. And the accommodation process is run through an accommodation specialist in UHR who will go through and evaluate your needs and have a dialogue with your manager about what is accessible and what's realistic in your role. And then they go through that process. But yeah, the first place, if you would like to start the accommodation process, there's a website on the UHR website about accommodations, and then there is a link to submitting an accommodation request there as well. So that would be where you would start, is by submitting a formal accommodation request through that website. So
yeah, so the main message here is, because sometimes these also, the FMD is specifically for a particular occurrence, right? As we talked about, then you have the FMLA, which has broader conditions that are applicable. And similarly, workplace accommodations or accessibility accommodations are also for specific health-related aspects. So sometimes it's not straightforwardly clear to us which one makes sense. FMD is fairly very clear, right? So, but for the other two, if you're not sure, we recommend the first step is to have a conversation with the HR team. They can then kind of advise you and guide you on what might make sense. Those are the slides that we wanted to go through. So again, thank you for your time. I'm gonna ask Megan to stop recording here so that we can open it up for Q&A. Megan, let us know.
Wait, the meeting has stopped recording.
All right, thank you. So, feel free to unmute yourself and ask your question, or if you want to drop something in the chat, that's fine too. What questions do you have regarding FMDA or FMLA, if you still have questions on it?
I have a question. So if the birth of a child, to be able to apply for the FMDA, if the child, for example, was born in May of the year, of the previous year, I can only apply for FMDA before it completes 12 months, right? So I couldn't, for example, apply this May and get it in the fall, the FMDA?
Likely not, yeah. So I think so we've had questions like this before, right? When does that 12-month clock, is it like from the date? So since we work in semesters, right, there's no such thing as starting in the middle of a semester, and life doesn't align with academic semesters. So we just try to count it in semester blocks, right? So if your occurrence happened spring of 1 year, then I think you have till the next spring, right? That's essentially it, because summer there is no FMDA for some. That's typically how we've done it. Now if things happen in the fringe area, I think that's a gray area. So I think you just have a conversation with us. Again, we don't have a blanket, because it just depends on when the event happens. So we can have a conversation. If you have a question about, hey, can I take it on this particular fall spring in the past, we typically have that conversation with you, right, to see if it makes sense or not for your situation. But in general, yeah, if it happens in spring of 1 year, you should probably take it within the spring, by next spring. Okay. That makes sense? Yeah.
Thank you.
So I missed the first part, and I apologize if you answered this, but my question was, how many of these policies are available for term faculty?
Yeah, so FMLA, workplace accommodations, is for everybody, right? Faculty, staff, all employees. FMDA is available for all faculty now. It is available for tenure track and term faculty. Starting, I think, last year, I believe, term faculty were included in it as well.
Okay, great.
Other questions? Well, if not, I'm going to hang around. So if you have some questions and you want to ask, I'm just going to hang around a bit. Adam, if you wouldn't mind hanging around for a bit as well, in case people want to hang back and ask questions. Otherwise, thank you very much for your time. As I mentioned, Connie could not join us today, but I know with her women's faculty group, she's planning to follow up with this and any questions related to the promotion and tenure workshop that we just had. So that's another opportunity there. And as always, our doors are open. If you're not sure, or if you still have some questions, or there's something you want to discuss more on a one-on-one basis, we are always available. Just feel free to touch base with us, and then we can follow up as needed. So again, thank you for your time. I believe, yes, this recording will be posted through our Sidebox and then made available. Correct. Just like with so broadly speaking, we do a term faculty advancement workshop, a promotion.